Good morning, Your Honors.
May it please the Court, Counsel, excuse me, Mark Stewart on behalf of Mr. Casp. There is essentially one issue to be decided, and that is whether the District Court committed error in imposing a two-level enhancement for obstruction of justice based on Mr. Casp's submission of an affidavit in support of an amended motion to suppress. The second part of the argument flows from that. If the Court deems that the District Court did commit error, then the District Court incorrectly calculated the guideline range. We submit then that the appropriate remedy would be to remand the case for resentencing. The question here is broken down into several subparts, but primarily it comes down to this. Mr. Casp submitted affidavits that provided the Court with his interpretation or his characterization of recorded telephone conversations he had with a cooperating individual, going in summary fashion to the point that when he went to the restaurant, he did not go there to sell drugs at that time. Ultimately, Mr. Casp did plead guilty to possessing the drugs with intent to distribute. So whether he went that day with the intent to sell them at that point or discuss a future drug deal, sell them to the CS 10 minutes later or 2 days later, the fact remains he possessed the drugs with the intent to distribute them. It is our submission that the statements in Mr. Casp's affidavit were not material because, by the way, the materiality in the obstruction enhancement is defined, and that is, would the statements, if believed, would they tend to influence or affect the issue to be decided? The issue or question to be decided was whether the police had probable cause to do what they did with Mr. Casp on that day. We submit that his statements, to the extent they undertook to reflect his state of mind, his frame of mind going to the restaurant, would not have affected the finding of probable cause. In fact, as the District Court noted at the hearing in July, and I'm referring to pages 11 and 12 of the transcript, and when it was getting to deciding this question, said, and I quote, "Had I found that his interpretation of the conversation was correct, I would have found that, well, let me say it's conceivable that I would have found that even though the officers misconstrued some of the terms that were used by the defendant in his conversations with the CI, they still had reasonable grounds for the arrest because their interpretation was not clearly unreasonable." Then the district court said, "But I also could have found to the contrary, namely that because the defendant didn't say anything that could reasonably have led them to believe," and here I'll end the quote at this point and pick it up in a moment. Essentially what the district court is saying, even if I believed him, I could have ruled either way, which is tantamount of saying, had I not believed him, I could have ruled either way, which means the statements by definition were not material. Picking up the quote again, page 12, that he was on his way to the hot dog stand with drugs in his pocket for the purpose of delivering them, that they had no reason to believe that he would have had drugs on him when he arrived at the hot dog stand and therefore no reasonable basis to either stop him or arrest him. Court went on then to say, therefore, his lies were material and imposed the two-level enhancement. When a court says, I could have ruled X or I could have ruled Y based on a statement, it's difficult to conceive of any substantive assertion made by an individual for which that proposition would not be true. And by that, what I'm saying, and I apologize in a somewhat convoluted way, is that everything would be material, short of I'm 56, when in fact I'm 57. Anything of substance that was put forward, because a court could rule X or could rule Y, if that is believed, means everything is material.
Well, is it a fair standard to apply that if the statements were intended to influence the district court's decision, they should be treated as material for this purpose?
Your Honor is correct. There are three aspects, of course, to the perjury notion or prong of obstruction: the falsity of the statement, which was, or statements, which was not contested; The other, materiality, or that the statement be material. And then the third, that it be willful. The court has said before that district court should make findings on all three of those aspects. Implicit at a minimum in the court's comments when it referred to Mr. Kaff's lies were that they were false. And as I noted, the falsity of the statements ultimately were not contested. As to willfulness, I don't recall that the district court made any finding that they were willful. Now, this court recently, I believe in the Riney case,
go ahead.
Had a similar situation, a motion to suppress an affidavit submitted by a defendant in connection with it, and the court again recounted the notion of we would explicit findings, independent findings on those three prongs of perjury are preferred, but not necessary, and said, and I'm paraphrasing, when a court finds that an individual has been lying, that involves a willful the willful making of a false statement.
That's not quite the question I'm asking.
I apologize.
No, it's okay. But on the issue of materiality, a district judge. Let me put it this way. Ordinarily, subjective evidence about the defendant's intent is not material to probable cause. Okay, it's an objective test based on the information that is available to the police or investigating officers. But sometimes district judges' thinking may not yet have gelled on a particular issue. And here we had Judge Grady saying, in essence, I need more from you. I need more. And he may have been right or wrong about whether that ultimately would be relevant or decisive in the probable cause determination. But he made it clear that it was likely to be relevant to his consideration as he analyzed the case. So why isn't the defendant's deliberate lies on these matters of interest to the district judge as he was formulating his thinking, why isn't that enough for us to conclude that this was material?
And, Your Honor, if I may, when you refer to the district court judge saying, I need more, you're referring to the first somewhat tentative ruling on the motion to suppress and said, I could deny it now, but okay. I think it's illustrated. I believe the answer to that is it's not in this case because I believe Judge Grady's frame of mind was illustrated as to why he wanted more, was best illustrated by his comments at the July hearing when after he heard defense counsel better explain why they were contesting the issue of materiality, and I'm referring to page 10 of that transcript. quote, well, to show you how far off I was in understanding the defendant's point last week. Now, that wasn't necessarily in connection with the motion to suppress when he gave him the opportunity to file the supplemental affidavit, but I think this indicates his frame of mind. Court went on to say, I assumed he was suggesting that there was a basis for assuming or for the officers to believe that the defendant was engaging in a conspiracy to sell drugs. And so I have given a great deal of thought as to whether there was a crime of conspiracy that the defendant had committed, and clearly he had not. If his intent was, as he says it was, just to go there to discuss the possibility of selling drugs and to go on, I think it's a fair reading, Your Honor, that to suggest that at the time the court said if Mr. Kasp would like to submit a supplemental affidavit, he was contemplating Mr. Kasp articulating an argument. There was no meeting of the minds, therefore no conspiracy. At this point, in order to have some time for rebuttal, I would, in summary fashion, point out that if the district court was in error in imposing the enhancement as we submit, his adjusted offense level should have been a 25 rather than a 26, and a range of 70 to 87 rather than the 97 months he received. Respectfully request the court vacate the finding of obstruction and remand the case for resentencing. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Thompson.
May it please the Court, good morning. Joe Thompson on behalf of the United States. Judge, the District Court did not clearly err in finding that the false statements in the defendant's affidavit were material. In this case, the defendant or the District Court found that the officers had probable cause to arrest and search the defendant upon his arrival at a hot dog stand based on recorded phone calls earlier that day between the defendant and the confidential informant. However, instead of just straight out denying directly the motion to suppress, the District Court gave the defendant an opportunity to submit a supplemental affidavit explaining the meaning of those recorded calls. In an attempt to get an evidentiary hearing with respect to his motion to suppress, the defendant then filed an affidavit, a supplemental affidavit, in which he falsely denied that during those conversations he traveled to the hot dog stand in order to, or he agreed to travel to the hot dog stand to meet with the confidential informant and sell him heroin. Now, contrary to the position that the defendant has taken on appeal, at the time he submitted that false affidavit, the defendant expressly argued that the false statements in his affidavit, those false interpretations of the conversations, entitled them to an evidentiary hearing on his motion to suppress.
Would you agree that's clearly wrong? That is, what he might say about his intent in those phone calls is irrelevant, right?
I agree, Judge. I think I agree with defense that, and the position the government took at the time was that the officers had probable cause either way because it's an objective test.
Yeah.
That being said, Judge, what the defense was trying to do in that case was say, yes, the government says there's probable cause based on these recorded phone calls and their content, and the argument that an objective police officer would have viewed them this way. But he was trying to really attack that at the court's invitation. Mm-hmm. He was trying to attack that suggestion that a reasonable person would interpret the calls these ways by purporting his own false interpretations of those phone calls, Judge. In other words, he was making those false statements, those false interpretations of those phone calls with the specific intent of convincing the court to grant him the evidentiary hearing on his motion to suppress, Judge. Now, the obstruction enhancement applies not only to successful attempts to obstruct justice, but just straight attempts. In fact, the application's notes define the perjury or materiality as a false statement that, if believed, would tend to influence the court's determination on the issue at fact. Now, in this case, the district court, as a matter of fact, found that the defendant's statements, his false statements in his affidavit, could have affected the court's determination on the issue, although they in fact didn't, Judge. And for that reason, the court's, or that finding, Judge, was not clearly erroneous. That was the court's opinion at the time. And that was why he specifically invited the defendant to file this supplemental affidavit, specifically on the issue of the reasonable interpretation of these phone calls, Judge.
So was that a mistake on the district judge's part to ask for that affidavit?
Well, we didn't think it was necessary at the time, certainly, Judge. But as you noted before, I think the issue hadn't gelled or crystallized in the court's mind. He had, at least at the time, he seemed to have some doubt about the reasonable interpretation of those phone calls. He was open to the possibility that maybe there was some alternative explanation that he wasn't able to think of and the government hadn't presented to the court. For that reason, he invited the defendant to submit his own interpretations. Now, that's fine. He had the right to do that, Judge, but what he didn't have the right to do with respect to the obstruction enhancement was submit false interpretations of those phone calls, and that's exactly what he did, Judge. And he did that with a specific intent of influencing the court's determination, and in a manner that the court had already admitted would possibly be able to and capable of influencing the court's determination. Now, the case law is clear on this. It doesn't have to affect. Attempted obstruction is enough. The courts talk of false statements that have a natural tendency to influence or are capable of influencing the court's determination, or they're calculated to substantially affect the court's determination of an issue. And most importantly, the courts have held repeatedly that the false statements need not actually affect the determination at hand. That's exactly what happened here, Judge. There are no further questions. I'd ask that the district court's sentence be affirmed.
Thank you very much, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Stuon?
As the panel has indicated, the police, like a situation like this, seldom know what's in a defendant's frame of mind. And while the court may have been curious about that, what we have here is a defendant saying, this is what was in my head. And as the court's noted, the probable cause standard, even the reasonable suspicion standard, is an objective one, and it's not subjective. Therefore, what was in the defendant's head, ultimately, was irrelevant. And by virtue of it being irrelevant, it was not material, and it was error to impose the enhancement. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. And Mr. Stewart, we appreciate your willingness and that of your law firm to accept the appointment in this case. The case is taken under advisement.